Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Strange Magic After Midnight, where our inspiration takes us to some very unexpected places. I'm your host, Incoherent Dust. This evening, we're having a very special episode and highlighting a beautiful person, an amazing co-host, Victoria Frost. And so you'll hear some poetry inspired by her words and her art. If you listen to enough of my shows, you know how much Victoria does, not just for the show, but also for in uplifting everyone around her and highlighting other people and their poetry. And so Pam Ray, my special guest co-host for the evening, and myself decided to return a little bit of that to Victoria in honor of her birthday. So happy birthday, Victoria. You're very loved, and we appreciate so much what you do and also who you are.
You're going to make me cry.
Thank you, guys. Oh, my goodness. I wasn't expecting this. I, like, came on here expecting to listen to Sad Birds. And
I got you with that one.
Oh, my God. This is just, thank you, guys. Thank you. It was actually a pretty shitty birthday. So thank you. This really means a lot to me.
You mean a lot to us. Huh, Pam?
Oh, absolutely. Happy birthday. We're so glad we could do this for you. I mean, I have to say, when I say we, of course, I mean mostly Mika. She put a lot of work. This was her idea. She put a lot of work into it, but I'm definitely happy to be along for the ride because you do mean so much to so many people. You have a beautiful soul, that's for sure. And I'm looking forward to tonight.
I am as well, especially with the awesome inspiration that you you created in your poetry, Victoria, because we have not only a collection of beautiful poems to read, but we also have a whole lineup of callers waiting. So I'm going to start bringing them on.
Oh.
So first of all, we have area code 804. You're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
This is Salwa. Happy birthday.
Hey, Salwa.
Happy birthday.
Hi, Salwa.
I'm so happy I'm here. I took a nap so I can be here because I usually can hang up that long. So happy birthday, and you are very special. You're right. So beautiful person. So honored that I get to know you. And everyone.
Thank you, Salwa.
I mean, thank you, Pam, and Mika, to doing this for her. So beautiful. Okay, I'll be quiet because there's so many online waiting, so I'm hushing.
Well, next up, I think we have the glorious and the one and only FaZe. Is that you, FaZe?
Thank you, Mika. Happy birthday, Victoria.
Thank you, FaZe. I'm so glad you're here.
Happy to be here.
And next up, we have area code 585. You're on the air, too, and who are we speaking with?
Joyeux anniversaire, Victoria. Happy birthday, dear. Your friends know you well.
Laurent,
oh,
let's
you,
sing
Laurent.
Together, Laurent, in French. Come on, 1, 2, 3. Joyeux anniversaire. Come on, Joyeux Laurent. Just kidding. Having fun.
All right, and then we also have area code 646, and you're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
Hi, Mark Looping. Happy birthday, Victoria.
Hey, Mark.
Glad to be here.
Hi, Mark. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Mark.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I've noticed Victoria's comments for a while now. And share the perception. She really helps a lot of people. So I'm glad to be here.
Absolutely. And last but not least, we have area code 937.
Hey,
area code 937, you're on the air.
Oh,
yes,
hey, Silk. Yeah.
And happy
Sorry,
birthday, Victoria.
Sorry, I started talking too soon.
Thank you, Silk. I'm glad you're here, too. We've missed
yep.
you on this show.
I know. I've been meaning to call Emma. I've been having this love affair with my new gaming laptop. And it's just, she's been taking all my time up.
Shame, shame. Just saying.
All right. Well, Pam, we have a full board and a full show, so I think we better get started. Victoria, just know you're very appreciated and loved.
I appreciate and love you guys all so much. I mean, truly, I like to think that I reflect back what the community has provided, and Late Night Poets, All Poetry, has just some really amazing people in it, and I'm just so honored to be a part of it. So thank you, guys.
All right. So the poems that we put up in prompts, and they were so varied in which ones people chose to write to, because some even went to your page. And some even, you know, they wrote tributes to you, beautiful, heartfelt tributes. So rather than try to figure out which one of your poems to read first that other people have written to, I'm just going to put up first one that I feel expresses you beautifully. And that was one of our prompt poems in the contest. It is The Royal Rose by Victoria Frost. And Victoria, go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Of course. This is the Royal Rose. There is a rose upon my ring finger. Faded now, the lines have bled. The vibrant blues now shaded with black. Romance once boldly filled my life with color, now slipped away with time. The memories, like its center, have lost their details. Yet here I remain. My stem is stubborn, guarded by jaded thorns, ready to strike at the unsuspecting hand. Even a skilled gardener knows to be wary. For I do not wish the honeysuckle to sweetly weave along my leaves, suffocating in kindness. I do not care for this companionship. Rather, I remain regal by my own right. No need for filler flowers planted at my roots. Emerald leaves are enough to add splashes of color. End poem.
Wow. This is such an amazing poem, and that was a beautiful read, Victoria. Well-deserved gold on this. And Faziana, since you hosted the contest this was originally written to, why don't you give us your first comment?
I love this so much. I mean, I gave it a gold, and I still think that it definitely deserved that. It is such a beautiful metaphor for her as a person, for someone who has been through a relationship where they don't need that ring to be the person who's amazing. You know, that particular rose may have faded, and they've evolved to have different kinds of roots, and they don't need flowers that are just filler. I love that line, no need for filler flowers planted at my roots. You want something meaningful. You are your natural splash of color, those emerald leaves. You don't need anything else to fake that beauty. I thought that this was absolutely beautiful as a poem. It was very intelligently written, and I just love it in general.
Thank you, Faze.
Great comment, Faze. I was totally gobsmacked by that last part, too. No need for filler flowers planted at my roots. I love that kind of punch of power that you stand on your own right. In defiance of kind of these other flower metaphors that you bring in, the honeysuckle sweetly weaving, suffocating in kindness. It's really about self-ownership, I feel like, and just beautifully done. And what about you, Sarah?
Really,
what did you think?
Me. Oh, this is fabulous, right? I really love her writing. It's just so delicate. It shows you how delicate you are and how strong you are at the same time. You are royal. I just love the poem from the start to the end. It's like you read like almost a fairy tale. It's almost say, once upon a time there was a rose upon my finger. That's how my mind went. I love how romance only bodily filling my life with color now slipped away with time. It's kind of sad. There's a lot of sadness, but there is... yet here I remain, my stem is stubborn, guarded. It's just show your strength that you're not going to be there. Yes, you went through all of this, but you're going to stand tall and stubborn by jaded thorns, ready to strike an expected hand. Even a skilled gardener knows to be wary. Just beautiful, the wording and imagery. A really well-deserved gold. Beautiful, beautiful. I could say more, but I give room to others to say something.
Thank you, Salwa. I really appreciate that.
My pleasure.
Great comment, Salwa. And Laurent, how about you?
This is a great, great piece. And there are several things that I really like in this, as well as the entire. Scorned and alone, bereft of romance, once boldly filling my life with color. Yet here I remain. My stem is stubborn, guarded. For I do not wish the honeysuckle. Emerald leaves are enough to add splashes of color. Those are lines that, to me, describe exactly who you are, because uppermost in your mind is the refusal of that suffocating kindness. You know, gratuitous sympathy need not apply. And then that line, even a skilled gardener knows to be wary. You know, that's a warning to the next applicant for your hand. You managed a self-description in this, tying it to the rose in a beautiful manner. It offers so much naked emotion to the reader. It really is a terrific piece.
Oh, Laurent, that means a lot to me. Thank you so much. That was a great comment.
Thank you.
Great comment, Laurent. And what about you, Mark?
Well, this is a strong poem and a beautiful poem, and I think it's the combination of strongly beautiful poem presenting the image of the rose. And just the language, the images are beautiful. The first stanza is so striking. I took that to mean a tattoo of a rose on the finger, and just the way it's just, Victoria can tell me if I'm wrong, but that's how I read it. And just the image of the blurred and faded lines going to black, I thought was really beautiful and striking and led into the rest of the poem. Like I said, strong and beautiful, the stubborn, guarded stem, the jaded thorns, and a comment on honeysuckle, another beautiful image, describing it, weaving and stating its absence, kind of moving past that whole thing of the earlier love and ending with the emerald leads and the splash of color. I'll just repeat the phrase I've already made, stated in a strongly beautiful poem. I really loved it.
Thank you, Mark. And it actually was inspired by a tattoo I do have on my ring finger of a rose. So that was a great catch.
Thank you. It's beautiful.
Nicely done, Mark. And Silk, how about you?
Yes, I think almost. Okay, I thought I was on mute there for a second. Sorry. But I thought everybody has pretty much gotten everything here, but I would like to say that I really enjoyed this piece because it kind of had a twofold a beauty and a little bit of pain underneath, I thought, with the I thought it made me think of what the trials you have gone through to become this lone rose who needs nothing else to stand on your own, and I just thought it had a profound beauty in it, in both the sadness and the independence that's shown through in this piece. And I'd love getting to hear you read it. It's a fantastic piece.
Thank you, Silk. That means a lot to me.
Well, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Silk. Great comment. And Pam, last but not least, how about you?
Oh, this is absolutely beautiful and a well-deserved goal. I like how it takes us from the past, which is oftentimes a distant and faded memory, to the person you have become, you know, that you do not wish the honeysuckle, which, you know, you I like the phrase suffocating in kindness, as if it's taking over, you know, what you really want to show. Like, it's almost like representing a false kindness. And then I really like, rather I remain regal by my own right. That is such a powerful statement right there. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Beautiful comments all around, you guys. And Pam, where are we headed to next?
All right. Up next, we will put up Salwa's poem, and here we go. All right, Salwa, there it is.
Okay.
Go ahead, give it a read for us.
Okay. I'm just going to say quickly what so people know. It's the first prompt. What is it? A poem, When We Are Driven by Fear We Dance, and the lines, dancing of the tune of the fiddles and lute, and saying that I'm fine. Those are the lines I picked. Okay, when I'm afraid, I dance. Quand j'ai peur, je danse. When I'm afraid that night is still my sleep, the day will begin to dawn. Leaves on nearby willow write my sorrows.
My icy tears of dread no longer flood my ocean. I feign that I'm fine. I dance a lot on distant mountains of wonder, on an air of a lute. I join a cloud of blue birds dancing under a breeze. I sing my dreams living in my soul, smelling flowers of hope. End of poem.
Wow, what a beautiful read and such a lovely poem.
Oh, thank you.
And absolutely. And Laurent, could you start us off on this one?
Certainly. All of Salwa's poetry has a wonderful lyrical quality, a sweetness to the language, a sweetness to the read that warms the heart. I find the opening lines very poignant. When I'm afraid that night will steal my sleep, that day will begin to dawn. How many times have we, in deep sorrow or anger, wished that night would last and the sun would never rise, because with the rising of the sun comes the reality of the day again. I feign that I am fine. I dance and laugh on distant mountains of wonder, on an air of a lute. And to me that speaks of visions and dreams, perhaps. I join a cloud of bluebirds dancing under a breeze. I mean, it's just gorgeous stuff. Very, very nice, Salwa.
Thank you, Laurent.
Beautiful comment, Laurent. And Afifiana, what about you?
I really liked leaves of a nearby willow write my sorrows. My icy tears of dread no longer flood my ocean. It's just so beautiful. And Salwa, you have a musical voice. It just flows so gorgeously. I love when you read your work.
Oh, thank you, Cezanne.
I agree with you guys about the lyrical nature of your voice, Salwa, and your writing. And I have to say, I love that there's like some whimsy in the piece as well, even with the ominous beginning. And there's also power, even though it seems soft. There's power in choosing to turn one's back on darkness and the storm of, I think, anxiety or worry that can loom on the horizon, and find instead taking control of your thoughts and putting them on hope and beauty. So it was beautiful.
Thank you so much, Mika.
And Pam, how about you?
Well, as always, Salwa has given us a beautifully written brevity, wonderful use of nature imagery, powerfully emotive. I really like the imagery of I dance and laugh on distant mountains of wonder on an air of a lute. On an air of a lute makes me think of the whole idea of when you make your own music in your head and you don't have to wait for a song to come on the radio to dance. I also like I join a cloud of bluebirds. There's something so very surreal and dreamy about that imagery. It's beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you so much, Pam.
Beautiful comment, Pam. And Silk, what about you?
Yeah, I really enjoyed your piece, Salwa, and I thought it was beautifully read, and it did. It had a kind of elegance, and it did have a bit of whimsy. I agree there with the ominous. To me, it was kind of like how sometimes you just put on a happy face when you're feeling down and just keep on going with that until you feel that way inside, I guess. And to me, that kind of how it spoke to me. It's kind of that faking it till you make it kind of thought to it, which I know I've done now and then. And sometimes you got to do. I mean, if you're just feeling down, especially for other people sometimes too, you just got to put on that smile and, yeah, just kind of fake it till you make it. And I thought that was beautiful. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah.
Great comment, Soak. And Mark, what about you?
Well, this is just a very lovely and very spiritual poem. I mean, I see that in your other work, deeply spiritual, deeply bonded with the universe. And she reminds me of a poet that means a lot to me, because he writes about Shelley, you know, on the Polder, you know, this feeling of kind of love of spiritual intensity, and then kind of launching yourself into the universe and dancing on clouds and mountains, joining a cloud of bluebirds, dancing on the wind, singing dreams. It's deeply spiritual, and you know, that means a lot. With Sawa, I happen to read French. With Sawa, I'm always reading the English and the French at the same time. Just kind of remarkable in two languages. That line, "A day will begin to dawn," and then the equivalent language in French, "Que le jour commence à prendre avant l'aube." It's just deeply beautiful in both languages, really spiritual. Lovely poem.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Great comment, Mark. And Pam, that's back to you.
Did Victoria get a chance to comment?
No, but
no,
could I?
Because I forgot about Victoria, the guest of honor.
Oh, I won't lie. Every time I'm sitting here, and I was like, she's gonna call me. She's calling someone else, and I do this. Oh, not me yet. Okay, it's coming. I have to say, I just adored this poem. Kind of like what Nika was saying about how it gained strength. It really reminded me of that. It reminded me of being a child and going into a haunted house. And this is how I learned bravery, was I would go into a haunted house because I hated them, but I loved going into them with my dad because he loved them. So I would, teeny tiny young me at like 5, he would do age appropriate haunted houses, but they're all terrifying when you're that young. So teeny tiny me would grab onto his coat and bury my face in the back of it. And I wouldn't look at anything, but by God, I made it through that haunted house with my daddy. And as I've gotten older, I've learned to look up and look around and enjoy them. And now I go into haunted houses and they typically don't scare me, but I love them because it's where I first learned bravery. I went into something that terrified me and I moved through it. And this too very much reminds me of that. It reminds me of the strange magic after midnight, because there are so many cultures that begin to dance in the night. The Native Americans have a sun dance that starts at night. Pagans that we see in Ireland and Scotland would have bonfires and they would dance around them, because there is just this strange magic in the dark. But at the same time, the darkness was terrifying. We have histories that tell us about how terrifying the darkness comes, and yet the day can be just as bad. It can mean that a day is coming to an end. Be that good or bad, it means something has happened and it is finalized. And so I love how at first there is the fear that the night is going to slip away, it's going to steal your sleep, and the day is going to begin against your will. And yet, as the sun begins to blink upon the horizon, that's when we get to start seeing the willow that is writing its sorrows in the dirt with the gentle breeze. We get to see the ocean that our tears have caused and say, is this worth it? Do I want to add another drop? Or am I going to pretend like I'm fine for a moment? And am I going to place my feet upon the mountain? And am I going to dance? And it's funny that you chose to use that line, because I don't think you know this about me, but I actually did climb a mountain when I was 16, the tallest mountain in the contiguous United States, Mount Rainier. And you climb it at midnight because the glaciers melt during the day. And so as you are climbing from Camp Muir to the top, to the summit, you get to watch the sun rise over the world. And there is a majesty that is in that. The dark is not so terrifying when you look down upon the earth and realize how small you are and how small everything else is. And then, of course, there's that freedom, the breaking free of the night to fly carefree with the bluebirds, getting to smell these flowers of hope. There is recapturing, a clawing out of depression, a clawing out of fear,
into something that allows you to truly be free. But first we have to dance. First we have to get up. We have to light that bonfire and we have to face our fears. And this poem was just so beautifully captured that, as you always do. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for a beautiful comment.
Yeah, I have to
say
that's
an incredible
deprived
the world
comment.
Of that poetic comment.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you, guys.
Oh, my God. I just, like, captivated by it.
A beautiful poem deserves a beautiful comment, right, guys?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Pam, where are we going next?
All right, Tefaziana, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
Okay, this was in response to Victoria's poem, I See, Says the Blind Man. Frost's Ink by Ephesiana. Poet's power pillages minds of prying eyes. She may think her scarlet ink absorbs unseen, yet she stamps her essence into her readers, who hold her word weaving into in high esteem. Sorry, can I? I'm going to restart because I totally messed that up. I'm sorry. Poet's power pillages minds of prying eyes. She may think her scarlet ink absorbs unseen, yet she stamps her essence into her readers, who hold her word weaving in high esteem. Tapestries that are threaded with her sinew, the pen carved of ancestral bones leaking legacy, Victoria's vulnerability unwittingly fortifies her. End poem.
That was a beautiful read, Ephesiana, even though you had to start over. It's because you put alliteration into your rights. It's like the alliteration is perfect.
Makes me lose my place, though.
I really love this. I think, first of all, how true your last line is, and how well you describe Victoria's power, the unassuming grace with which she carries herself and writes. But also, when you talk about tapestries that are threaded with her sinew, I really love that you're speaking to her power there of putting so much of herself, so much brute honesty, gut-wrenching honesty into what she writes, that that it's impossible not to feel, it's impossible not to know that what you're reading is genuine. It's a beautiful tribute and beautiful response to that prompt as well.
Thank you.
And Mark, will you start us off with a comment?
Yeah, just beautiful poem. It was great word weaving, Sienna. I had that feeling, the meter, the language, just kind of weaving in and out through the sentences, a picture around the tapestry that kind of ended up showing, you know, it's a striking image. And you know, beautiful lines. I'll call a couple out. She may think her scarlet ink absorbs and seem, you know, she stamps her essence into her readers. But that's really strong poetry, beautiful. And that, then the, you know, the last line's already been commented on, but I'll say it again. Victoria's vulnerability unwittingly fortifies her. That's not just good poetry, it's the truth. I mean, I don't know Victoria, but that's what I think we all see in her poetry and comments, and at least I do. And it's the, you know, the juxtaposition there, the vulnerability, that's actually a strength of engagement with others. It's really a striking conclusion to a beautiful poem. Really well done.
Thank you.
Well said, Mark. And Silk, how about you?
Yeah, I thought this was an awesome tribute to both her piece and to Victoria. And to me, that last line was killer. I love that Victoria's vulnerability unwittingly fortifies her. I love that observation you made. And that's something I too have seen a little bit in her poetry. Like I said, it was a lovely read and just a lovely tribute.
Thanks, Silk.
You're very welcome.
Thank you, Silk. And Laurent, What about you?
Well, I felt compelled to quote the entire piece back to you. I cannot separate its elements. It's a tribute to Victoria's vulnerability, which unwillingly fortifies her, and with plenty to spare, as she stamps her essence into her readers. I think it's a lovely tribute to a great poet and friend.
Thank you.
Absolutely, Dilat. And Victoria, what about you?
Oh, my gosh. This just leaves me so incredibly tickled. Not only because to me these are beautiful words that I have to admit I'm not sure I feel deserving of, but at the same time, even if this was someone else who came and read this, I love that it is that answer to the piece that I wrote, because there are many times that I think poets will write a piece and other people don't grasp the message that they're trying to convey. And yet we leave an impression with them. I've often said that just because I might interpret a poem differently than what the author intended, or people interpret my poetry differently than what I intended, it doesn't take away from those interpretations. It doesn't take away from those meanings. And so for Faith to write something that reminds us as poets that our words can leave lasting impressions on people, that it can weave its way into people's minds, perhaps make them rethink things, leave these strong imprints as we expose our souls to people's judgment. Beautiful, because we don't want to be left unseen. And yet, even if people don't see the picture we are portraying, sometimes they see another facet. And that can allow us to really reevaluate how we approach things, reevaluate how we perhaps were looking at something. And there's just a true beauty in this space. It's like Laurent said, I want to quote the whole thing. Each line is independently strong and beautiful and powerful. And yet as a piece in its entirety, it's breathtaking. So thank you for sharing this.
Thank you so much. I felt that way about the prompt poem. I absolutely had to write to it. So I loved your poem, I See, Says the Blind Man.
I'm just sitting over here looking stupid. But thank you.
And Pam, how about you?
Me? Okay.
I tell you, I don't envy the crazy ladies that have to judge this contest. Oh my gosh, so many wonderful rights, and this is no exception. It's dense. It's a brevity, but there's so much emotion, and every line is so powerful and so beautiful. Not a single wasted word, and I love the alliteration in it, and especially that first line, and the use of the word pillage, as in the power of the poet's words just dig deep into the minds, the places that, you know, we never thought about within ourselves. And it's a beautiful tribute to her, and I like that you say she may think her scarlet being absorbed unseen, and then to the rest of the right with that last few lines, you say, but this is what she means to us. This is what she becomes to people when she shares her writing. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thanks, Pam.
Can I?
Absolutely.
Can I comment, Mika?
Great comment.
Oh, yeah, I was just about to call on you.
Okay, thank you. I thought you told me I left. I wasn't sure because I usually leave the show, so I'm sitting here. Sorry.
You always say goodbye. I wasn't going to forget you. Yes. Like I forgot Victoria.
No, that's okay. I just love the word and choice are so powerful and beautiful reflection of Victoria. She literally leaves in us. I like the line, we hold her word, sense into the reader, her stamp. She definitely leaves imprint on us so deeply with her comments and her deep, profound, very profound comments and wording. And then also
when she said the pen carved in ancestor bones leaking legacy, she always go that deeply, bring something about her memory, her childhood. She share always something about it, and this is really get us to know her as well, and definitely her vulnerability. So I agree with all of you, especially Pam. Every line has its own stand. Just amazing, really fabulous tribute. I didn't read the poem, but very beautiful tribute for Victoria. So I enjoyed it very much.
Great comments, all of us. And Pam, that's back to you.
All right, Lauren, your poem is up. Go ahead. Give it a read for us, please.
All right. I used as a prompt the excellent piece by Victoria called Waterfall. And this is called Waterfowl. Cloud bursts from inside under the umbrella. Mist rolls in beads across your face, turned away from the gray wind that whips. The sky that falls, eyes that blink in surprise at the weight of the moment. Breath comes in focused gasps, not as much for yourself, whose lungs struggle for air, but for the dark nonchalance with which pain can be delivered, and the easy way you were fooled into not knowing any better. Perhaps the raw discipline of self-castigation strengthens resolve. Ire warming angry bones which reject any roof over your head, open to the sorrow of the heavens, leaving you weeping as its water fell. End poem.
Wow. Very intense poem, Laurent. I can't wait to hear the comments on this. Silk, why don't you start us off?
I thought this was a powerful piece, Laurent. I always love your poetry, and especially that middle stanza to me really hit home for me. The breath comes and focus gasps, not as much for yourself whose lungs struggle for air, but for the dark nonchalance with which pain can be delivered, and the easy way you were fooled into not knowing any better. That thought you wove there, it kind of spoke to me about how people can so easily stop wrong people at times just because they don't know better, or they were brought up a certain way, or just, I don't know, just their way. But I also liked how you portrayed here that they gasped at the person's cruelty and not for themselves, and it's kind of a very deeply layered ride. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you, Silk.
You're welcome.
Excellent comment, Silk. And Mark, what about you?
Well, just a really powerful poem. I mean, this type of poem is why I read poetry, and it's just really strong. It's about internal emotional weather, but I also get, you know, an image of the figure in this landscape, you know, near a waterfall, and it's tied into the emotional feeling. It's a very vivid picture. The lovely phrases, kind of the, you know, awakening of intense emotion. The eyes that blink in surprise. Gas comes in focused breath. It's just a picture, almost a little bit of a mythic touch to it, of a figure there, just feeling intensely and, you know, kind of wandering, reject any roof over your head, open to the sorrows of the heaven, leave you weeping as the water fell. It's lovely. It's a very strong poem.
Thank you, my friend.
Sure.
Excellent comment, Mark. And Pam, what about you?
Oh, wow. This is a powerful and emotive write. I really like the imagery of mist rolls and beads across your face turned away from the gray wind that whips the sky that falls. And that's beautiful. And, you know, that there's something about this
Like with the lines, but for the dark nonchalance with which pain can be delivered, it feels like there's a sense of indifference. And I'm not sure if the indifference comes from the person delivering the pain or if the crying is all a show put on. But I think, you know, it's so powerfully written, so beautifully written, and you pick up on these emotions that are being betrayed or portrayed, and there's just a sense of betrayal. I really like ire-warming angry bones. That's the kind of anger that goes down deep, and it's the kind of anger that does not seek to ever forgive. So an excellent write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
Oh, that was an awesome comment, Pam. I totally agree with you there. And Victoria, what about you? So how do you protect yourself when the thing that is meant to protect you is the one that dumps buckets upon you? When your safe haven is not safe. This poem reminds us that sometimes we seek safety and safe haven in places that will continually let us down. It reminds us that sometimes, as much as we may not want to, we can't rely upon the umbrella to protect us from the rain, that the wind is going to come and whip across our face. And it reminds me, I have very long hair and I have curly hair, and so it's coarse. It can be coarse without a ton of conditioner. But I remember being in fifth grade. I have really weird life stories, people. I'm so sorry. But I remember being in fifth grade, and I had my hair down, and it was windy. It was a gray, cloudy sky, and it was windy. And I was talking with some of the boys, because it's fifth grade, and you start talking to boys. And the wind, like, whipped my hair, and it caused the ends to hit them. And they were like, man, your hair, like, hurts. And so this really kind of reminds me, of that, though, is sometimes we are placed in situations, sometimes we're in the middle of a storm, and the thing that's supposed to protect us, that umbrella, ends up just bringing the rain in. It captures the wind, and it causes our hair to whip against us, almost as if life is reminding us that it's in control, that nature is in control, and that we just happen to exist here. And it reminds me more metaphorically, and my poem kind of touched on this, but it reminds me more metaphorically of you enter into a relationship, be it a friend, be it a lover, be it my friend who is currently going through one of the hardest moments of her life that even I am breaking for her. She's trying to become a mother, and 2 weeks ago, she gave birth at 22 weeks. I think I mentioned this on one of the earlier shows, and on Sunday, my birthday, the smaller of the twins passed away. And she does not know how to survive beyond that, and that is the storm that she entered into. She went into IVF. She intentionally had a baby, knowing that it was tracked medically from the beginning to the end, and yet the end did not come when it was supposed to, because life did not let it come when she was supposed to. It was supposed to be safe, and now half of what she was expecting is just gone out of her control. And this poem reminds me of that. Be it the journey to motherhood, be it a friendship, be it a lover, so many times we walk into these situations where we think, this is safe. We're going to build something together. We're going to build a life. We're going to build a home. We're going to build things. And we think of it as a sanctuary. And yet inside that sanctuary, it crumbles down upon us. The winds come and whip us. And sometimes the only way to protect ourselves from going into this again is to become a little jaded, to keep our bones warm with the reminder that the last time you tried, the last time you had faith, the last time you trusted. This is what happened. And this poem reminds us of that, that it's okay sometimes to be jaded because it's how we stay safe. But at the same time, it does not protect us from openly weeping within the rain. It does not protect us from the feeling of heaven's sorrow that overtakes our soul. Because rejection is hard, no matter the way that life brings it. And so this is a beautifully powerful and strong piece, Laurent. And I am so very thankful that you shared it with us today.
Well, that was a beautiful comment, Victoria. Thank you.
Absolutely. It's such an insightful comment as well. And what about you, Sawa?
Oh, I love this. Laurent has always profound writing, surprised us every time. Very emotional, just full of emotion. It's just, everyone said everything, I'm not going to repeat, simply saying that letting of this deep pain to really let it out, the sorrow, open the sorrow of the heaven, leaving you weeping at his water fell. For me, when water is cleansing, it's just like, and the title, when I read the title, Water Fell, it's really cleansing. In the beginning, also the first line, clouds burst from inside. The clouds is where the rain and the water is, and just let go, burst, and you have to let go of it, even though all of this happening, the rejection, whatever the reason, the gray wind, at some point, the pain can be delivered. And even though you don't know better, any better. Just beautiful. It's just really timeless. This can be applied to so many things, or so many people have sorrow and pain. And great advice. Beautifully done.
Much appreciated, Sawa.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, a beautiful comment, Sawa. Sorry, I had to take myself off mute there. And Afiziana.
Thank you.
Afiziana, what did you think?
I really liked this poem. I thought the last stanza especially was amazing. I thought it highlighted that we put ourselves through hell sometimes rather than seeking the shelter. We want to show ourselves that we can. We end up embracing that pain of love. And I really liked the line, "In the easy way you were fooled into not knowing any better." It's kind of a difficult truth that we have to face sometimes because we're tricked into slowly letting the raindrops of hurt drown us when it was supposed to be refreshing us. It's like you're expecting to get showered in love and it ends up being like little insults and then it escalates and then you're drowning. So I thought that this was a really powerful piece and it's worded very elegantly.
Thank you, Fasia.
Great comment, Afiziana. I have to agree with you and also touch on something that Pam was talking about. When you say not as much for yourself whose lungs struggle for air, but for the dark nonchalance with which pain can be delivered, I thought that was so spot on to, I think, a universal feeling that that humans share, that the rejection, the betrayal itself, that wound could be born if not for the fact that it was carelessly bestowed, the fact that it cost nothing to someone to toss you away, to reject you, to betray you, and they can shrug it off and it means nothing. Therefore, you're left alone to deal with the pain and also the shame of being that naive. And I think you really, really described that in such a way that it cuts deep to read it because it's too true. The shame of being naive and of allowing yourself to believe in something that the other person clearly had no investment in. I think, you write so well, Laurent. And then in the end, I really love that you talk about the way that you harden yourself with self-castigation, the way that you tell yourself, you know, you're never going to let this happen again. You're so stupid. And how it closes you all off. Also, you wall yourself off from love and comfort that could be found in the future, but the potential is choked out by the projection of that past experience. Even though that past experience and your behavior, therefore, is a survival mechanism and rooted in self-protection. it becomes something that leaves you open to more sorrow because you reject any roof that could be offered to shelter you.
Great comment.
Great poem.
Thank you.
All right, Pam, we're back to you.
All right, Mark, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a refresh, please.
I'm going to have to. Oh, really? Okay. Yeah, let's see. I'll actually have to get to the link. Is it on the board? No.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's on the board.
Not picking it up. Let me get to that. Let's see.
Refresh.
I guess so. Oh, here it is. Okay, thank you. Yeah, I'll say something. I read Pam let me know the contest was occurring. I don't think I would have noticed it otherwise. So I had already noticed components. I mean, Victoria's comments and poems a little bit, but I went into them after. Within the contest, just to get a better sense, and I read through her poems about relationships, and then her poem about being in the shower and cloaking herself in her hair, and it kind of clicked into Saint Agnes because she's the patron saint of young women working through relationships, and also the story is, you know, that when she was martyred, they stripped her bare and she shrouded herself in her hair, and that's how I got the idea for the poem. I just read that poem about the shower, and it suggested this poem. That's the poem. So I'll go ahead and read it. The St. Agnes Contest, written for the Victoria Cross Contest. Don't think I ever get enough of contests where the topic's love, doubt, uncertainty, and fear. I'll get coffee and sit here, work on my poems today. It's the same subject, anyway. I'll see if there's a contest whose themes strike me. I guess I'll choose this one from the contest list. Interesting. I guess I missed it yesterday. Filled up pretty fast. One entry left. I'll be the last. Interesting topic here, St. Agnes with the flowing hair. Known for that, the icon show, martyrdom, the usual theme, long hair merging with the flame. The saint of younger women who currently are working through relationships, love. No, I never get enough of this stuff. After all, it's love. The story is really interesting. A guy who wanted everything. What else is new? Who insisted, even after she resisted, that she love him on his terms. That opened up a can of worms. She wouldn't go along with that. No way am I doing that. He ran around shouting, hating, said, she's not cooperating. And so they grabbed her, stripped her bare, shrouded in her flowing hair, put her in a brothel. Nope, not doing that. Then with a rope, bound her to a stake and lit the heaped up logs. She took the hit for not doing what the others wanted. Graceful and undaunted, she just bore it, took the blame, took everything that came from twisted love's assaulting flame. End of poem.
And before I call on people to comment, I just want to let you guys know we have another caller, and this is area code 509. You're on the air, and who are we speaking to?
Jeff Swan.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
Hey, Jeff.
Oh, I'm out here running in the night, causing trouble.
It's okay, so good to have you call in.
What's that?
Oh, it's so good to have you call in, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm glad you're here. I haven't been to in a long time. It's been a little bit tumultuous, to say the least, the last, probably 2 months or so. So it's been kind of rough, but I'm kind of back to sort of a state of normal. So, you know, we're good.
Well, great to hear. And Victoria, will you comment first on Mark's poem, please?
Oh, I would love to. There's a real beauty in this poem. The kind of nonchalant wandering through a contest, because I'll be honest, I've done that. I've had days where I go, I really want to write, but my muse isn't talking to me. And so I wander through, I'll look at names and I'll pull up probably too many tabs of contests, just trying to find one that speaks to me. And sometimes it's not this huge call of the muse. Sometimes it's just something that goes, huh, makes you think. And so you sip your coffee and you slowly connect with the whisper in your ear, the whisper that I think a lot of us want to ignore. And yet, in doing so, there's that calm presence. And I think in a lot of ways, that calm presence is perfectly captured by St. Agnes. She wasn't a bold woman in a lot of ways. She just said, no, the only husband I'm going to have is Christ. And her suitors didn't like that. And so they exposed her faith, said it was a cult. They exposed her in a brothel. The one man that tried to have his way with her was struck blind, to which she promptly prayed for him and healed him. And then after all of that, they burned her at the stake. It reminds me of how I've kind of lived my life. We can't fix the past. We can't change how things have happened in our life, be it fair or unfair. Sometimes that's just life, just like St. Agnes. But what we can do is we can approach it in a way that protects the person that we were. I remember when I was going through therapy, as I was divorcing my ex-husband, it was not a good relationship. He was abusive in more ways than one. And my therapist asked me, he goes, if you could talk to yourself as a child, what would you say? What would you do? Because what happens to us as children, the areas that our parents try to meet and don't often are what direct our relationships in the future. And the one thing I always have to remind my younger self is you are enough and you are safe. And the beauty of St. Agnes is that she knew she was enough and she knew that she would be safe, even if it meant dying. Eventually, she was going to be safe. She knew where her place was. And so I can't help but love this poem. There's a gentleness there, but there's a strength. There's a stubbornness. There's grace. And yet there is this unwilling desire to stand where you are meant to stand and not where others expect. And sometimes it's really hard to do that in this day and age, when everybody seems to think that screaming at people will get them to do what they want or believe what they want. And sometimes you just have to gently say, I'm going to stand here until my stuff is ready and you're going to wait your turn. And that's it. You don't have to hurt people. You don't have to be mean. But you can be gentle and you can be firm. And I think this poem just beautifully captures that essence.
Okay. Thanks, Victoria. That's an incredible comment. Incredible. Thank you.
It's an incredible poem. Thank you.
That really was an incredible comment, Victoria. Thank you.
And Salwa, what did you think?
Oh, thank you for asking. I really love this poem, even though it's so sad. It reminds me of so many stories in the past, how they burned them, the witches, even Jeanne d'Arc, how she was born young as well. But for me, this is not happening anymore in our time. It's a different kind of flame. People burn us with abuse, with pain that they put in there. They can strip you from your identity. There's a different kind of flame that burns, not the same burn, not the same flame. And you put it there, as you said at the end, graceful and dented. She just bore it, took the blame, took everything that came from twisted love, assault, and flame. If you read this without the story of St. Clarice, what she had to go through, someone can be blamed for so many things, and that's just take the flame. That's absolutely what Victoria said. You just, like, some relations are abusive, and you just have to, you really take it, but then you believe with strength, but even it will always leave this mark inside of you, this assaulting flame. I love that. And I also like how you started on deduction. It kind of made me smile. How you came up with this decision. Don't think I ever get enough of context. It's kind of humorous a little bit, even though the story is so kind of sad and really beautifully done. Great gift of storytelling. And very moving, moving deeply, the story, really, because you can relate to it easily.
Well, thanks.
Oh, my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Oh, my pleasure.
Great comment, Salwa. And Viviana, what did you think?
I really liked it. I liked the way that the hair was described, long hair merging with the flame, and I can just picture the fire engulfing that hair. And Victoria has such beautiful red hair based on her pictures on El Poetry, that's so why I can just picture that in the flame. And I don't want to see you burn, but it was, at the same time, it was like this beautiful image of strength. I love the closing stanza, graceful and undaunted. She just bore it, took the blame, took everything that came from twisted love's assaulting flame. That last line is incredible. And I loved what Victoria said, the part about, like, telling your younger self, you are enough. And I think that that's so important, and your comments are so beautiful.
Absolutely. And Silk, what about you?
Yeah, if I get
on mute
here.
Oh.
I was on mute. No, I really like how you wrote this out, how you gathered all these feelings about Victoria from all these different places you were talking about and wove it into your piece. And I really enjoyed just the whole thing, because Victoria to me is a very, very beautiful soul. And I really like how you portrayed her here, especially I'm trying to the saint of younger women who currently are working, the relationships, marriage, love. No, I never get enough of this stuff. After all, it's love. I really like that stanza in your poem in particular. It really hit home, or it really hit hard, and it was lovely. And the whole piece was lovely and a great read.
Thank you.
Great comment, Silk. And Pam, what about you?
I really like it. First of all, I like how you take us through the thinking process when you're trying to find a concept that you want to write for, and how sometimes you just settle just because you want to get something out. I think that's very relatable. I like how you read Victoria's poem, and it made you think about St. Agnes, and that you go into the details of some of the story of St. Agnes. And within that, you know, not only are you educating people who haven't read about her before, but you're offering up a beautiful tribute to Victoria. You know, you're offering up the idea and that Victoria is someone who stands up for what she believes in,
who is someone who cares about other people. And I particularly like the phrase graceful and undaunted. It's beautifully written and very well done.
Thanks.
Absolutely. Mm. And Levant, how about you? Laurent, are you muted?
Showing off, sorry. I love the way the poem started with an introduction to St. Agnes, because I was not at all familiar with her as a character. And the way you enter the poem, kind of speaking of yourself in the third person, or at least referring to yourself that way, the saint of younger women who currently are working through relationships, marriage, love, though I never get enough of this stuff after all, it's love, the universal subject of all poets. When in doubt, go with love. The strongest stanza to hit me was, and so they grabbed her, stripped her bare, shrouded in her flowing hair, put her in a brothel, nope, not doing that, then with a rope bound her to a stake and lit the heaped up logs. She took the hit for not doing what the others wanted. Now, I'm assuming the brothel stanza is metaphorical and not a take on Joan of Arc. As a woman, graceful and undaunted, who resisted, knowing her own strength, unwilling to submit to a guy who wanted everything, as you say. Now, love has to be a two-way street, not suffering from love's twisted flame. As a poet, you take us to a place of uncompromising understanding, a refusal to die by the fire others start, regardless of its beginning. This is a marvelous rite that crosses the Rubicon of dangerous emotion, accepted as a burden to be borne. Really well done.
Thank you so much, Lauren. Thank you.
Beautiful comment, Laurent. And Jeff, did you get a chance to read this poem?
No, I didn't. I didn't get a chance to. I heard part of it, and it sounded really good, but I didn't get enough of it to really make a comment.
Oh, well, no worries. I would like to just say, Mark, I like the quietness with which the character you exhibit portrays her power. There's definitely power in asserting oneself in this way. It's not explicit. She's not grappling for power over others, only over herself and her autonomy. And she quietly and reservedly holds to her sense of personal integrity, which I think is what you were trying to highlight. And I think that does complement Victoria as a person as well. So great write.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thanks for reading. And Silk, would you mind giving your piece a read for us?
Yeah, sure thing. I'd be honored. And I read all the poems on the thing, and I went and read some of hers, and I was taken in by her poem, The Corpse Bride Comes, and this is my kind of answer to that, I guess. But here we go. The pale groom, entombed, an ivory effigy crumbling, drinking deep blackest ichor, bubbling like a tar pit, belching its fumes, sucking down the marrow of my youth and dragging my tongue through the dregs of rotten fruit. Soil salted with shattered bones, dust of disintegrating dreams, devils, dominoes dropping, a chain reaction spiraling slowly to death, blood pumping through red and blue veins, flowing in rich hues, now each beat taints. Dark bile seeps into the streams like quicksilver sinking into obsidian. The demon rising, wearing my skin like a white-tie monkey suit, raking my eyes across the Lovecraftian horrors that span all the worlds and planes, till light aborts into the dead light, waning embers of forgotten suns, and I am driven into purgatory with no reprisal from this madness, driving my hands to compose discordant requiems of my undying demise.
Wow. That was a fantastic read, Silk.
Well, thank you.
absolutely. And Laurent, can you start us off with a comment on this? Laurent, yes?
Boy, you'd think I would learn after a while to push the GD button, but no. Okay.
I have the same issue.
Really? Hey, you started this whole thing years ago. I just followed in your footsteps.
Yeah, I know, I know.
taken from a dark poem filled with excellent imagery and emotion, are these two stanzas which really stand out for me. Soil salted with shattered bones, dust of disintegrating dreams, devil's dominoes dropping, a chain reaction spiraling slowly to death. And the other one is, and I am driven into purgatory with no reprisal from this madness, driving my hands to compose discordant requiems to my undying demise. There was a power in those two lines. I especially like that soil salted with shattered bones. That's just great phrasing. You know, the image of it is so true to what is exactly true. You know, all the bones of everyone who's ever died have been salted into the earth one way or another, whether it be solid bone and flesh reached its end, or perhaps the ashes of us consumed in some kind of purgatory. And it's that purgatory that you write about in that last stanza, those discordant requiems to my undying demise. I have unfortunately not read The Corpse Bride, so I can't tie the two poems together the way I'd like to, but that was mightily impressive, my friend.
Well, thank you, Laurent.
That was an amazing comment, Laurent. And Pam, what did you think?
Well, unfortunately, I missed the reading, but I had a chance to read through it. And, oh, my goodness, a just powerful and beautiful dark bright. I like the alliteration in dust of disintegrating dreams, devil's dominoes dropping. You know, that whole idea of that chain reaction that happens once evil is set in place. I like the, I mean, wow, the demon rising, wearing my skin like a white tie monkey suit. I think a white tie monkey suit is one of the most creative lines I have ever seen in any rite, let alone a dark rite. And the use of the word Lovecraftian fits perfectly in that stanza. So absolutely a wonderful dark rite and very well done.
Well, thanks, Pam. Appreciate it.
Beautiful comment, Pam. And what about you, Ephesiana?
I loved it. It's so, like, dark and yet beautiful at the same time, which is becoming, like, typical Silk. The more I read from you, it's, like, it's always, like, kind of disturbing and yet gorgeous at the same time. I love soil salted with shattered bones. And the last stanza is incredible, especially the last two lines. Really, I loved the whole thing.
Well, thanks, Fasiana. Appreciate that.
Great comment, Faze. And Salwa, what did you think?
I'm not a surrealistic poet, but I love the imagery. I think it's really brilliant how you presented something about the life of Victoria in here, integrated. I didn't read the poem, but I see integration of her personal experience from the beginning, the pale groom and Tom, an ivory effigy crumbling, coming back as a, almost like a Greek effigy or drinking, so dark, drinking deep, like a core bubbling like a therapist pulsing in fumes. The imagery is just sucking and terrifying almost. That's the start, sucking down the marrow of my youth. That's what got my attention, that he sucked her youth. This is the, like, I stopped there because it's so powerful and I keep going. It just gets more and more intense and dragging my tongue through the drags of rotten fruit. Wow, the metaphor here just say it all, literally, and you keep going more intense and more intense. Very brilliant metaphor and word, choice of wording. I was just very impressive.
Well, thank you, Sala.
Oh, my pleasure.
I so agree with you, Sala. I love that the vibe of the poem is so eerie and unsettling, but beyond that, and, you know, kind of just enjoying the writing for what it is itself without looking into the meaning, I think there's so much beauty that comes about with your skill in word choice and metaphor, Silk, and imagery, as Sala was saying. You know, there's so many lines that are quotable in this poem, lines that would be inspiration for a show I really like what she was saying, the line that she called out, the dragging my tongue through the dregs of rotten fruit, but also dust of disintegrated dreams, devil's dominoes dropping. And there's the white tie monkey suit that Pam called out as well. There's just so much absolute beauty in your writing. I think you're very talented.
Well, thank you, Mika. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And Mark, what did you think?
Well, I saw this poem as gothic, and maybe the poet thinks that's just putting too much of a label on something that's complexly feeling, but actually coming from me, that's a huge compliment, because I think gothic taps into, I've always felt this, that it taps into something really deep within us, kind of a darkness, a complex darkness, you know, that we want and have concern about, and all the images derived from that, and they're beautiful and powerful, I've always been attracted to this kind of thing without having really done it, and this kind of makes me want to do it. It just kind of reaches out, the deep feeling, the strong feeling that's a bit dreamlike and disintegrated and really dark, and tapped into really deep emotion. And the striking lines already comment on, like the white tie monkey suit. They're macabre, but they're beautiful and compelling too. And they're part of the whole complex of drawing into this kind of world of deep dark feeling. Where, you know, to read another, light aborts into dead light. Waning embers of forgotten sun. It's beautiful. It's on the border, like no reprisal from this. It's on the border of madness in a way, but it's just sane and strongly executed and really feel to kind of dark emotions that we all have that are attractive to us, but also really disturbing. I just totally love this poem. So.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate really that, Mark. And gothic's an awesome comment to make, because I love gothic stuff as well, and I'm pretty sure Victoria loves gothic too, so I was hoping to go for that.
Don't worry. I'm sitting over here tickled pink waiting to comment.
Well, that's great, because I was just about to call on you.
Yes. Okay, so first off, standalone. This poem is absolutely stunning. As usual, Silk, you have been able to capture this dark beauty that, even though we're talking about things like dragging our tongue through the dredges of rotten fruits, talking about soil salted with shattered bones, it's not pretty, and yet at the same time, we cannot help but revel in it. That being said, knowing the poem that you wrote it off is even more amazing to me. I want to think you did this intentionally, but it's almost like the yin to the yang. So mine's The Corpse Bride Comes, and in it, I'm analyzing at what point does a person die. Mine starts off, there's a difference between blue and gray undertones. Deep blue veins, after all, means the heart is still beating, even if the pallor is pale. And mine kind of shows how life can be lost even before you reach the grave. And so it ends with this idea that at least I can write my own eulogy as I've donned my burial clothes. And so mine's analyzing kind of this fading of life, whereas yours, on the other hand, starts at the grave, entombed, an ivory effigy crumbling, drinking deep blackest liquor, bubbling like a carpet, belching its fumes. Mine's looking at mortality, and yet ichor is the blood that flows through the gods. We're talking about immortality. We're talking about what comes after life, and we see that as the demon rises, wearing my skin like a white tie monkey suit. So in one way, it's very much, I can see it as a yin to the yang, as a groom to the bride. And yet at the same time, I cannot help but see how these two could be mashed together to show the bride approaching the grave, and in a wedding, the bride approaches the altar, and the groom stands there waiting to continue on to the afterlife. And so I think that there's actually quite a lot of clever workings from, again, and I could just have a big head and just feel egotistical right now, so I do apologize, but I think that there's some really clever workings here, because I see throwbacks to some of the things that I said, and yet at the same time, you've captured your own meaning. You've captured this idea of someone spiraling into their darkness. Perhaps they have already given over to the darkness, and this is how it's coming. Instead of writing a eulogy and saying a farewell, they are now going to be writing the stories of their demise. It almost reminds me of Stephen King. There's, I want to remember what it is, but there was a video, a movie, that Stephen King is actually trapped in like this other reality, and all his monsters have taken over his body, and they actually terrify him, and so he's stuck in this other place, and his monsters have taken over his body, and that's why he writes the things that he writes. And in many ways, your poem is far more beautifully captured that concept, and how people can lose the beauty of life, lose the innocence, lose the things that perhaps we dictate makes us human, and leave us as this hollow shell played out by our own personal demons. It's just in so many ways, it's so clever, and I just absolutely adored it. So I'm just tickled.
Well, I'm glad you loved it so much and blown away by your comment. Thank you, Victoria.
Yeah, Victoria, you gotta stop blowing us away so hard with your comments. Cause like my hair is like just all crazy now, blown back in the wind, and I gotta like brush it every time. It's not convenient.
No, you can't follow Victoria. She's like a rock star when it comes to comments.
She is absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Jeff, were you able to give Silk's Piece a read?
Yeah, I listen to it pretty much, and I've read his stuff before, and it's always, you know, awesome, but in a dark way, you know, but this was no less ravaging and different word combinations, and that's very unique. He's got a his style is unique, as kind of a one of a kind. So it's always a joy to read him, and this is probably the first time I've listened to him read his poetry. Which didn't disappoint.
Oh, thank you.
Great comment, Jeff. And Pam, where are we going next?
All right, Jeff, your poem is up. Go ahead, give it a read for us, please.
Can I talk somebody else into reading it? I'm kind of busy right now. I'm driving. Sorry.
Oh, so you need somebody else to
Absolutely.
Read it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm chasing jackrabbits.
Yeah, absolutely, no problem. And let's go ahead and have Lauren read it, please. Is Lauren still here?
Yeah, is this Victoria by Lauren?
Oh, yes.
Lauren likes that mute button today, I think.
Well, no, I was trying to answer.
Come by
there.
The mute button.
Is it To Victoria by Swan Song?
Yes, we're on to this.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. I was distracted. I apologize. To Victoria by Swan Song. When I think about her, I vision pure water flowing from hard quartz in the Paradise Valley, feeding tender fawn lilies with her blushing yellow petals, delicately fragile, that steals breath with the speed of a calliope's golden wings. The soft croon of syllables frolics with the pure wind that whirls from the mountains that bore her from a knobby-kneed tomboy to the red-haired Aphrodite with a tender word. A life force of mystery who asks for deeper love that delves into meaning for herself in her own way as she negotiates through the deep labyrinth of poetry and its myriad passions to discover her own voice. Orpheus sings inside you, my friend, with all the boldness of a meadowlark. Take your time on the path, meander with an open eye, and sing along the way as every wildflower gives you a song.
Wow.
And pause.
That was a beautiful read, Laurent. And Jeff, what an amazing write. I have to say your imagery is so live and colorful. You always write beautiful nature imagery, but I love in this write how you weave that talent in with a description of Victoria's spirit, which I thought was very apt. And I was particularly taken with your line, Orpheus sings inside you, my friend, which is a beautiful tribute to a poet who really does delve into the depth with what she writes. I think it was very on point. And everyone who listens to her is compelled to listen, not forced to listen, out of politeness, but that she's compelling to listen to or to read. But it was really beautiful.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And Victoria, what did you think?
One of my favorite places in the world is Mount Rainier. Be it winter, when it's just a magical winter wonderland, or in the summer, when the frost has melted and the rivers, little creeks seem to bubble out of all these different places surrounded by flowers. It's always a place of beauty. And it has deep meaning in my life because one of my favorite people, it was their favorite place as well. And so I cannot help but see Paradise Inn on Mount Rainier and the valley that surrounds it with this little creek bubbling, feeding all the little flowers and the life that births there. It's delicate, and yet at the same time, it goes through some of the harshest winters, and it returns. It comes back. It continues on. And there's a real beauty in that I think that sometimes we forget. It's a cliche saying that stop and smell the flowers is there for a reason, because these are delicate things that continue against life regardless of what we do to them. The weeds that crawl out of the cracks because they found a way to continue. And so I feel like Jeff knows me personally because I see Rainier in this. I see me as a child running through the woods in my shorts that my mother made, making mud pies and climbing trees and doing things that is not what a lady is supposed to do, and yet it was the joy and the beauty of childhood. It was in learning to appreciate the magicalness of nature. And as always, here Jeff has caught just that beauty. He's caught the way that a bird, a meadowlark, can so quietly sing and yet captivate us. It catches like the contest you were, I thought we were doing this week with the bird. There's a music and a magic to nature that so often we just miss. And so to have Jeff weave these words together to capture the beauty, the strength, the delicacy, and the ongoing resilience of nature and turn it into this melody of life. It's just stunning.
it truly leaves me breathless, because there is that force of mystery. There is that wonder that it doesn't matter how old you get, you can't help but stop and appreciate it from time to time. And just the reminder that just because something is small, and just because something is quiet, and just because something is delicate, does not mean that it does not leave a lasting impression. It's a stunning piece. Thank you, Jeff. Truly.
Thank you. That's quite a compliment. I think it's mainly because Laurent read so well. He made it. He made the sound. The poem sound really good.
No, but you always
do have such beautiful, beautiful nature. You really do.
Reading shit sounds like shit. Reading beautiful pieces yields beautiful things.
No,
amen.
Poem's strong in itself.
Good point, Laurent. And Athesiana, what did you think?
I thought it was beautiful. I loved all the nature imagery at the beginning, and it all felt like it worked on multiple levels, like maybe she is the water feeding all of the flowers, like, you know, with her beautiful comments and things like that. She's encouraging the garden of late night poets, and all throughout you use great mythological references, especially Orpheus was very fitting. I thought that this was a really smart and beautiful poem.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Great comment, Athesiana. And what about you, Mark? What did you think?
I just thought it was a beautiful poem. You know, reading it, when I envisioned pure water flowing from hard quartz. As soon as I hadn't read the poem before, but as soon as the pure water flowing from hard quartz, I knew I was in the hands of a good poem, a terrific poem. What I love about it, I love poems that pull me into an alternate world, a mythical world, and this totally did that. You kind of live in this space, and you end up, you know, just connecting there with the life force of mystery, who asks for deeper love that delves into mystery. This kind of leads you into kind of a pretty intense alternate world, which becomes mythical when Orpheus starts singing in the last stanza. You know, this is what I really love, this kind of pulling you into an alternate world. It's really, really there, Jeff, so I hope you don't, you know, I hope you accept the compliment, because this is what the poem,
I appreciate it.
This is what the poem's really about, you know. I can see myself in a nursing home, on a deathbed or something, reading a poem like this and just kind of being pulled into somewhere else and just being immersed in it. It's really good and really strong.
Well, Victoria's from Washington, so I talked to her one time. We had a conversation, I think about a month ago, and it was, she was from Kennewick, and she'd moved over to the mountains and finished college and stuff like that. So, it's not hard to put two and two together because we're both from the same state. And probably one of my favorite places to go is the Paradise River and in the Paradise Valley of Mount Rainier. Just reading her work, I read several of her poems and there's some talent there. There's a serious talent. Sometimes I think on AP you may not feel it as much because you have different writers, who are at different levels. I think 15 years ago or 20 years ago, if I would have read one of Pam's work, I would have said, I just wouldn't have, it wouldn't have rang with me. But like now I read it, I eat it up. Levon, the same thing. Black Silk Rose, I mean, I read your guys' stuff and I go, wow, this is good, But you don't feel it all the time. So I was trying to hopefully encourage her to pursue it more and be patient.
Yeah, but you escape into it.
You definitely did, Jeff. You definitely did. I am
I'm truly honored, and I'm smiling like an idiot over here because, really, this is you're probably one of my favorite nature poets. The way that you write and capture nature, and attribute it to all these little nuances and moments in life, you know, you really do understand that life is not about the big moments; it's about the little ones.
Little big ones.
And so, yeah, and so this piece just really, you have no idea how deeply it means to me.
Great comments, you guys. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is just beautiful, wonderful use of nature imagery in Greek mythology to describe a person who's gentle and strong. And I do like the personal touch of a knobby tomboy to the red-haired Aphrodite. I think the most beautiful stanzas, though, are the last couple of ones, especially that line, a life force of mystery who asks for deeper love. And then Orpheus sings inside you, my friend, with all the boldness of a meadow lark. Those are just wonderful lines, very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And
Sal,
what did you think?
This is really beautiful. I'm a nature person, so this is really speaks to me deeply. Just so tenderly and vividly laced in delicate nature to portray Victoria outer and inner beauty. It's in a heaven-like place. And it also awakened so many sensations, the voice, the gesture, the smell. You really awaken every feeling, actually. And I love how you ended I like the beginning and the title, call it Victoria. That's beautiful. Just beautiful imagery. And then the ending shows a genuine friendship. Really fabulous, right? And a great read to Laurent, too. And it's good to hear you, Jeff. You always comment on everyone. He's just a nice person, nice, great poet. So it's great to hear you.
I try to be nice. I appreciate it. But I try. Well, you know, you always want to be positive with people. I mean, you know, you want to encourage people because poetry is something that you need a lot of encouragement on. So you don't feel like you suck. You know, I know that sounds terrible, but you know, I mean, that's, you know, people need that encouragement and to focus on the positive parts of their words. You know, it's important.
Absolutely, thank you.
Amen.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And Laurent, how about you? What did you think?
I wish I could compliment every stanza in this, but I was especially taken with the second stanza. I believe it's the second one. The soft croon of syllables frolics with a pure wind that whirls from the mountains that bore her from a knobby-kneed tomboy, the red-haired Aphrodite with a tender word. The poem contains lovely phrasing like that, and it offers enviable character detail, not to mention a wonderland where every wildflower gives you a song. You know, his words encourage us to pause and appreciate the path life leads us on, which is filled with the beauty of nature and all its visible mysteries. I thought it was very well done.
Appreciate it. I almost threw it away. I almost tossed it because I didn't like it.
Wow.
If I can say very briefly, the poems of mine that I like the least seem to do the best. So never, ever, ever throw anything away.
Yeah, no.
I've had that experience myself a few times.
Now I need to see the poem you want to keep, Jeff. Gone.
Now I'm going to keep about 10 years worth of junk. You know.
And so please send us the comments on this piece.
Yes, I loved, we're still on Swan's poem, right? Or did we move on?
No, we're still on Jeff's poem.
Okay, I lost the screen for a little while, and I had to get up for just a minute, and I couldn't, okay. But, no, Swan, I loved your piece, and I agree with what Victoria said earlier. You write nature fantastically, and I thought this was just a beautiful tribute to a beautiful poetess. And I can see why she's grinning like a fool, she said over there. And I loved every bit of this. And like Laurent said, I'd like to compliment every last stanza because this was just all fantastic. Just I can't say any more than it was just very, very beautiful and very well done.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Very welcome.
Thanks for being here, Jeff, and for giving us your phone instead of throwing it away. And Pam, where are we going next?
All right. Up next is Before Eros by Namya. And when you're ready, go ahead and play that SoundCloud.
All right. We had a couple of people drop right now, but I'm sure they'll come back.
Before Eros, tattoo your touch upon my skin, and I will wear it for eternity. It will be your mark upon me. Paint your breath upon mine, and I will breathe you in forever, your soul and mine intertwined. Let your seed blossom within me, and thus my womanhood complete, so as your manhood be. Under the rain we complete this dance, our features tangled with each other, as we rise before Eros' altar.
That was so beautiful. I'm so glad we had a SoundCloud for that. Namiata, hear it in your voice. And Silk, can you start us off on this one?
Yeah, this is a beautiful piece, and I read that the same poem she wrote too. I read a bunch of your poems, going through some until I get my muse to spark, and I almost wrote for this one as well, and I could see why she was inspired by it, and I loved her take on it. I thought it was so beautiful, especially that third stanza, "Let your seed blossom within me, and thus my womanhood complete, so as your manhood be." It spoke to me as both the as twofold, as the completion of a man and woman joined, two souls becoming one, and perhaps even of the making of a new person that's both of you combined. And I just thought it was so beautiful, and I loved her reference to Eros on the last stanza, as we ride before Eros's altar. Just beautiful.
Absolutely, I agree. And Pam, what about you?
Yeah, this is a beautiful, sensual brevity. And it's wonderful all the way through, but I especially like the opening line of "Tattoo Your Touch Upon My Skin," that whole idea of wanting something deeper and more. And, you know, and how there's a sense of command, but it's a gentle command. I like that. And, under the rain, we complete this dance, our future tangled with each other. Just, wow, beautiful all the way through and a powerful ending to a central rite. Very well done.
Absolutely. Great comment. And Ephesiana, what did you think?
I love it. It's so intimate. Paint your breath upon mine, and I will breathe you in forever. And the seed part where it does seem like she wants to be impregnated, there's this intimacy there, too, where it's both, like, the physical act leading to it, but also the idea of being permanently connected through that child. And the futures will be tangled together. I thought that was really beautiful, and the Eros' altar also is a really nice touch. There's been a lot of mythology mentioned in tonight's poems, and I love that.
Very true, Faith. I think that that kind of speaks to the mythological nature of the one we call Victoria Cross. Victoria, would you like to weigh in on this issue?
I didn't think I'd call myself mythical, but I'll take it, I guess. Oh, I'm so in love with this piece. I'll say it once. I've said it once. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it again. I don't believe in soulmates. I believe that love, that relationship, that who we determine we want to call our soulmates are all intentional things. And I feel like in many ways, this poem catches that. They are not becoming entangled and intertwined because that's what the future and the world foretold. They are making an intention to tattoo the touch upon the skin, to breathe them in forever, to feel the seed blossom and find this dance within the rain, tangled within each other. There's a beauty here, an understanding that love can be hot and steamy, and sensual is always fun, but real love, real connection, and real depth come with those little moments, those little caresses, the memorization of how someone does something. It actually reminds me of one of Jeff's poems. Jeff's on my brain now. But he, in one of his poems that he wrote, he talked about how his wife nuzzles into the crook of his neck, and she fits just perfectly there. And this really reminds me of that, the ways in which we find how our body fits with the person that we have chosen. It fits because, like a worry stone, we have fully made ourselves tuned to the other person, and it's been intentional so that each step along the way we grow together, that even if there's friction and even if there's sometimes you might butt heads, it's all an opportunity to better be for each other. And it's, to me, it creates one of the most beautiful ideas of love, not something that the universe decided, but something that two people willed together, entangled together, so that they might be truly intertwined and perfect for each other. It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning.
What a lovely comment, Victoria. And how about you, Mark? What did you think?
That's just a lovely poem. It's about spiritual and physical union, and it goes so deep and so confidently on that. How it's so basic to all of us, our sexuality and our union with another, and how deep it goes, how it dominates our character as we write before Eros altars, we're sexual beings. This poem expresses that so well, and I just love the confidence. It's a, you know, it's, this is a new generation. It's the confidence of stating what sexuality is, and the feelings. They let your seed blossom with me, and thus my womanhood complete as so as your manhood should be. And this type of poem is really important for clarity and insight into who we are, and just understanding ourselves as sexual beings, as beings, you know, kind of reaching out for union and achieving it. It's really lovely, beautiful, strong poem.
Great comment, Mark. And Jeff, what did you think of this write?
As I listened to it, I could picture a pond, a small pond, with a droplet of water hitting the pond that's reflecting everything perfectly, and it shatters in 1,000 pieces. And because that's what love does to you when it's right, or, you know, and that's what her poem reminded me of. And I saw that over and over again as I listened to it. So it was beautiful.
What a lovely image. Great comment. And Pam, I can't remember. Did I have you comment on this piece? I'm sorry.
Yes, you did.
Okay. Well, then I will go ahead and give a comment. I will just say that I love that this beautiful, reverential approach to sensuality. And also that there's, I think, a two-layer point to this rite. You guys have really touched upon it well, but that there's so much physical eroticism as well as a philosophical interpretation that can be taken from the lines saying, let your seed blossom within me and thus my womanhood complete. So as your manhood be, I feel like that is a one good example where there's absolutely a physical eroticism to those lines, but also that longing to intertwine can be taken on such a different level, which is true, as you were saying, Victoria, of relationships themselves. That is an amazing rite. And with that, Pam, we're back to you.
All right, we have carryovers, so there will be a part two show. We will wrap this poem up with I See, Says the Blind Man by Victoria Frost, and there will be only time for one or two comments. So if you don't get to comment, then make sure to leave a written comment for her. And Victoria, go ahead and read this for us, please.
Of course, this is I See, Says the Blind Man. Pigmented pages bleed my pain, the cathartic confessional, tracing the web of cancer in my core. Laid out plainly, I repent. The hordes of eyes that do not see. Keith used